Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Fired Up, the show that takes you inside the machine called politics. This is your host, Steve, and we're here on WJMS Radio, bringing you the information, the education, and the action that you need to take in order to be aware of what's going on in the world and how we can make our political system do what we want it to do. I have a whole segment of show to talk about today, but I have to start off with something that just fell out of the sky into my lap this week. As you know, the impeachment process going on in Washington, D.C. moved into its second stage. And as part of that, as I was listening, you know, as I do, because I spend a lot of time on the road for my daytime job, and I was listening to the news, and interestingly enough, the Republicans put as part of their defense effort for the president, they quoted a section of a book written by an author by the name of Neil Katyal, who was a, or who is a Supreme Court lawyer who was also a former acting Solicitor General for the United States in the Obama administration. And he wrote a book about the case for impeaching President Donald Trump. And part of his book was used as part of the argument in the Republican side's defense of what the president was doing as far as the items for which he is being considered for impeachment. And as it stands, that wouldn't be too big a thing. Each side presented, you know, testimony and articles and letters and other things to help strengthen their case. The thing that stuck out about this to me was the passage from this book that they cited was one that, you know, I was familiar with. I'd had a conversation with someone about the subject of impeachment, and we were talking about it over lunch, and he had actually read this book and was telling me about this paragraph, among others, in the book that, you know, painted a rather bleak case for what the former Vice President Joe Biden's son, Hunter, had done in becoming a member of the board with a Ukrainian gas company called Burisma. And unless you've been hiding in a cave, this has been nothing but in the news for the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks or so. And as I said, you know, in listening to the testimony during the day on the radio and then watching it again and the highlights on the news that night, this jumped out at me because they actually read the section of the book with, you know, an interesting little twist to it. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to read you the section as they presented it, you know, in their argument, and then we'll go from there. So the excerpted paragraph read as follows, quote, "Is what Hunter Biden did wrong? Absolutely. Hunter Biden had no real experience in the energy sector, which made him wholly unqualified to sit on the board of Burisma. The only logical reason the company could have had for appointing him was his ties to Vice President Biden. This kind of nepotism isn't only wrong, it's a potential danger to our country, since it makes it easier for foreign powers to buy influence." Now, stop here. There was a break in the sentence with two ellipses and some dots, and then it continues. "No politician from either party should allow a foreign power to conduct this kind of influence peddling with their family members." So, as I said, that paragraph, or those two paragraphs taken as they were presented, paint a pretty, you know, pretty damning argument about Hunter Biden joining the board of this Ukrainian gas company. The difficulty is, in that section where I mentioned that there were two ellipses with the three dots in the middle that broke up that sentence in the middle of the second paragraph, let me read you what was contained in the section that was edited out. Now, the missing clip that came out of the paragraph says this, and I quote, "The thing is, it's not illegal. That's why Hunter Biden didn't hide his involvement with Burisma. And it's why President Trump's children, Ivanka, Don Jr., and Eric, continue to conduct business around the world with impunity, as does President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who works in the White House." So here you have a case where a paragraph with a section cut out of it points the finger one way, in this case at Hunter Biden, and, you know, through him, through his father, former Vice President Joe Biden. But when you have the whole context, you now see that the author, Neil Katyal's intent was to discuss the wrongness of nepotism, no matter who's doing it. So this just jumped out at me because it illustrates something that I say quite frequently on this show. And if you are a listener, first of all, I thank you for listening. But second of all, you've heard me mention many times about understanding the game that's being played. And this was a clear case of one side shaving words out of a paragraph in order to create a false narrative on a point they were trying to make. Now, could they have just left the additional text in? Absolutely. But that would have softened the point they were trying to make, that there was a Democratic side issue with what's going on in Ukraine. By taking the president's children, his older children, out of the article, it now says that it is an anti-Biden article rather than its true intention, which was an anti-nepotism article. And, you know, this was brought out in interviews with the author on at least one mainstream media source, MSNBC, where, you know, he mentioned that fact specifically. And he concluded that this exercise done by the Republicans was, in his words, and I quote, pathetic. Continuing the quote, it's very similar to a lot of other things they've been doing to try to defend the president, close quote. You know, and again, this is, you know, no ordinary guy. This guy is a prominent lawyer. He is a professor at Georgetown University, and he is a former acting Solicitor General under the Obama administration, representing the United States in the Supreme Court. And just to flesh that out completely, the Solicitor General basically is the arguing attorney for the United States of America in cases brought before the Supreme Court. It is not a position they give to, you know, a lawyer lightly. There are a lot of hurdles to jump and criteria to meet and so forth. So this was not, you know, someone who is unfamiliar with the law and with what's involved here. So this example just goes to reinforce what I've said many times. When you hear something on the news, from no matter from whatever source you get it from, you need to do your diligence. You need to dig in. You need to go to ground, dig deeper, dig wider, find out the facts all the way around it, both pro and con, and come to your own conclusion. So I heard this on the radio. I heard it mentioned on television. And in digging back into it through news, and this article came from Newsweek magazine. You know, so it's a reputable source. And there were other sources that cited it as well. So, you know, you can take those facts and draw your conclusions. So found that interesting and, you know, just had to drop that into the start of this week's episode. So game on. And I'll be posting this up on my Facebook page, facebook.com/firedupradio. And it will be there along with what was presented in Congress, along with the original article, including a copy of the pages out of the book. So you can go check it out for yourself, draw your own conclusions. I'm going to move on into what was intended to be this first segment, but I did, you know, as I said, I wanted to drop that little gem in there. And that segment today, we're going to talk about polling. And if you're like me, a day does not go by when you're listening to the news or listening to radio stations or listening or watching, you know, TV or anything that you aren't hit with a poll about something or other. Maybe you've actually received a polling phone call where they have asked your opinion on an event of the day. Now that we are fully immersed in the political season, there are dozens of polls out there running, you know, every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are poll crazy. But what exactly are polls? What do they do? What is their use? Are they helpful? Do they influence the way people vote? Do they influence the way people think? We're going to look at that from a couple of different angles as we go forward in the show. So, of course, we need to start with the basic question. What is a poll? Well, a poll is nothing more than an opinion gathered from a group of people in a moment in time. It is a question or series of questions that are asked to gauge how a group feels about some subject, whether it's a sports team, whether it's food, whether it's a play, whether it's politics, you know, whatever the event is of the moment, there can be a poll surrounding that. And polls have been around, you know, since the dawn of time. You know, in ancient Rome, in the Colosseum, Caesar would take a poll of those in attendance as to whether or not, you know, a person lived or died, either thumbs up or thumbs down. That was a basic form of a poll. Majority rules. You know, what percentage of the population feels one way versus what percentage feels the other way. In today's world, you know, polls have become an art as well as a science. They are a mathematical phenomenon. They are, you know, an emotional phenomenon. And of course, you know, especially now that we're in the political season, you can't not turn on, you know, a media source, whether it's TV, radio, newspaper, social media, any of them, without seeing a poll flash across your screen or, you know, be asked out over the airwaves to you. But, you know, kind of the mystery behind the curtain of this is, where do those numbers come from? You know, you hear about political polls now every time you turn on the news. The news cycle is jam-packed with polls. Flip on the nightly broadcasts or browse online news articles, and you're going to be bombarded with the latest statistics about the percentage of Americans who believe in God, the breakdown of dog lovers versus cat lovers, how many people between the ages of 65 and 85 own a Nintendo, Wii, whatever it is. When it's an election year, the poll numbers themselves are headlines. You know, who's the front runner? Who is gaining in the polls? Who is declining in the polls? Who is polling as to whether or not candidate A can beat candidate B? You know, and it just goes on and on and on. And sometimes polls make great headlines, but, you know, the underlying question is, how accurate are they? How much faith should we put in polls, particularly political polls, that attempt to predict the outcome of an election? We've had a couple of instances in recent history where the polls pointed clearly in one direction and the election result was in the exact opposite direction. And of course, I'm talking about 2016 and, you know, Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. You know, the polls actually mirrored what the popular vote was going to show. However, you know, when you broke it down into local areas, you know, candidate Trump, now President Trump, actually performed better in those key markets that he needed to win in order to, you know, garner the electoral votes he needed to become president. You know, so, you know, political polling is like anything else. You know, it's a source, it's a type of public opinion polling. You know, now, when polls are done right, public opinion polling can be an accurate social science when they follow, you know, strict rules about sample size, random selection of participants, and margins of error. However, even the best public opinion poll is only a snapshot, as I said, of public opinion at a particular moment in time. It is not an eternal truth. Voter opinion, as we've learned, you know, shifts dramatically from week to week, even day to day, as candidates battle out, you know, or go to battle in the campaign arena. You know, we see changes in the poll standings, you know, say in the Democratic side. We see changes in those numbers daily, you know, depending upon, you know, who they're polling, where they're polling, you know, what the questions are. Political polling is an up-down thing. It fluctuates, and it just is unstable. And again, it goes back to my top questions. Does it actually, affect the outcome of the race? Does it change, people's way of thinking? And the answer is, it's kind of a partly yes, it does. There is a segment of the population out there that will go with the trend. If a candidate has been polling at the top of the heap, for a long period of time, people are of the mind, well, everybody else seems to like this guy or this lady. I guess I like her too. And as I said, we've seen that play out time and time again in our political cycles. But there is a mechanism to it. The top political polling organizations today, they use, mathematical methods and computer analysis to collect response from the best representative sample of the American voting public. But there's still, a sense of art in it. It is not a totally exact science. And it is oftentimes needing to be adjusted and interpreted to, isolate and identify those subtle trends that can help predict the eventual winner on election day. So let's talk a little bit about some of the elements that go into a poll. First and foremost, any poll, whether you are or actually any statistical analysis, you have to gather what is known as a representative sample. Currently, there are, 200 plus million registered voters in the United States of America. So how many represents a statistical representative, sample of that group? Well, sample size is tied to the number of people you are going to poll. If you're going to do a poll of 100 people, then you could see margins of error, and we'll talk about those in a second, as high as 10%. But if you're doing a poll of 5,000 people, you might see a 1 or 2% margin of error. So the number of people that you are polling has a direct influence on how accurate that poll is going to be, given that moment in time and the questions that are being asked. For example, if 50% of the voters are female, then your representative sample should include, 50% as female. It applies across the board to characteristics like age, race, geographic location. So your first step is defining what your representative sample is going to look like. And there are mathematical models that they use to do that based on, gathering information from the census data, tempered with, what is the outcome we seek from this poll? Do we want to see how many likely voters are going to vote for candidate A, B, C, or D? Or do we just want to see an overall trend of, do you like the candidates or do you not like them, and so forth? So depending upon the questions that you're going to ask, that governs and goes into how you determine the representative size of your sample. The most popular method for including or for getting a random sample in today's world is using the telephone. And there are several methods that are used in order to reach out via telephone to conduct a poll. The most used one and the most popular one is what's called random digit dialing. And here, pollsters will start with a database, an updated database of telephone listings in a given area or in the country. They will have both landlines and cell phones. Because if they only called numbers in the database, they'd exclude all the unlisted numbers. And remember, the overwhelming majority of cell phones are unlisted. So in order for them to capture those voters, they analyzed the database and listed numbers. They identify the active blocks of numbers, and then they just do brute force, start at 0000 and then go 0001 and so on and so forth. And they dial through that block of numbers, providing the poll to whoever answers the phone, either with a human or with a computer-generated poll or a robocall. The computers are programmed to randomly dial every possible number in combination in each active block. Once the political organization has collected the responses from a sufficiently random sample, then it has to adjust or weight that sample to match the most recent census data for the area they are dialing into, for age, sex, race, geographical breakdown, political party, etc. And they do that in order to filter and refine the data so that they can say with some confidence that this represents the American population. If you are calling into, metropolitan Los Angeles, you're going to get a different response set than if you're calling out into, Utah or Ohio or Iowa, simply because the demographics are different. The makeup of the population is different. According to some data from years ago, 20% of Americans exclusively had a landline telephone, 63% had both a landline and a cell phone, and only about 15% had only a cell phone. Now, those numbers have changed drastically in recent years, with many more people now having as their sole source of telephone communication a cell phone. And there are a lot of households that have no landline at all, and they are a cell phone household. So, that throws a little bit of work into the process of polling. As I said, since cell phones are almost always unlisted, for example, pollsters like ABC News randomly dial numbers in known cell phone only exchanges and weigh those responses separately. That is, they look and judge against the demographic data of the cell phone only calls and merge them into the landline combined phone results in order to generate a poll that is, more reflective of what's actually out there for the voting public. As I said, this is, not a wholly scientific approach. It is an art form. And because it's an art form, there is a statistical error that can occur. And, you've heard the term margin of error. And that typically means that, there is There is a fluctuation factor that has to be included in the poll. For example, if the anchor man's going through a poll and it says, the polls show Johnson with 51% of the vote and Smith with 49% with a 3% margin of error. So what that means is, is wholly different from what we might think it means. We might think that, because the one candidate leads the other, that, by 2 percentage points, then, and there's a 3% margin of error, then the poll is invalid. Actually, what that means is that within each particular candidate, there is a 3% error. So, if Johnson is polling at 51%, he could be anywhere from, 48 to, 54% of the vote. And if Smith is at 49, he could be 46 to 52% of the vote. So one thing to keep in mind when you hear these margin of error numbers is realize that it is applied to all candidates in the sample. All right. So, it has little to do with the overall accuracy, and I use that term carefully. The true margin of error of a political poll is difficult to measure because there are so many different things that could alter its accuracy. Biased questions, poor analysis, simple math mistakes, etc. But, you know, as a rule, the way that polling organizations try and minimize that is by trying to get to as large a sample size as possible. The larger number of people that you get, the smaller the margin of error becomes. All right. But there are other things that go into the makeup of a poll that can affect its ultimate outcome. And a key is, you know, the poll questions themselves. Depending on how questions get asked, poll results can be, you know, skewed one way or the other, either positively or negatively, or made totally irrelevant. Give you an example. You know, most poll questions should have simple and direct answers, like, you know, which candidate will you vote for in the election? Might be one that we can see in a poll. Or do you approve of the president's performance? Another is, how likely are you to vote in the midterm congressional elections? All of these questions, the answers that respondent can choose from, can greatly affect how accurate that poll is. Another way, you know, questions and answers play a role is by their order. Sometimes the questions can be ordered in such a manner that it will actually steer the poll in a certain direction. So if we use an example of it being like a horse race question in which respondents are asked, you know, who would you vote for in a head-to-head race, candidate A or candidate B? You know, in order to get the most accurate result, pollsters should ask the horse race question like this first. You know, why do you want to do that? Because the wording of any preceding questions could influence the respondent's answer. You know, if they are asking questions of a negative nature about one of the candidates over the other, then that could affect, you know, who they ultimately would choose. You know, and again, as I said earlier, most political polls are conducted over the phone. Whether the pollster is a live interviewer or an automated system, there are usually set answers from which to choose. And if you've ever taken a phone poll or been involved in a poll, even with someone on the street that stops you and asks you poll questions, you know, you usually have multiple choice answers to choose from. Political pollsters have discovered that the wording of these answers, you know, often can add an insight into the political opinions. You know, another example, and this one comes from another well-known polling firm called Rasmussen. Rasmussen Reports tracks the approval rating of the president instead of simply asking if respondents approve or disapprove of his performance. Rasmussen asks them to choose from the following options: strongly approve, somewhat disapprove, or strongly disapprove. The reason they do this is they found that adding the word somewhat into the options are important for capturing, you know, minority opinions, for those people who, you know, aren't definitely in one camp or the other, but, you know, there is a range. And, you know, you've seen this if you work for a company and, you know, they have a, you know, performance poll or some other type of survey, you'll see they'll ask you questions and ask if you strongly agree, somewhat agree, et cetera, all the way down to strongly disagree. You know, so how and what is presented to you in the questions in the poll is something else that you need to take account of as you engage with these. That's a lot to think about. So we'll take a break here. You're listening to Fire It Up. My name is Steve. We'll be right back after the break.
Life. I wonder, will it take me under? I don't know.
Imagine smoking weed in the street without cops harassing. Imagine going to court with no trial. Lifestyle cruising blue behind my waters. No welfare supporters. More conscious of the way we raise our daughters. Days are shorter, nights are colder. Feeling like life is over. These snakes strike like a cobra. The world's hot, my son got knocked. Evidently, it's elementary. They want us all gone eventually. Trooping out of state for a plate. Knowledge, if coke was cooked without the garbage, we'd all have the top dollars. Imagine everybody flashing. Fashion, designer clothes. Lacing your click up with diamond rolls. Your people rolling dough, no parole, no rubbers. Going raw, imagine law with no undercovers. Just some thoughts for the mind. I take a glimpse into time. Watch the blimp read, the world is mine.
If I rule the world,
imagine that.
I free all my sons. I love them, baby. Black diamonds and pearls.
Could it be, if you could be mine, we both shine.
If I ruled the world.
Still living for today, in these last days of time. Yo, paradise life relaxing. Black, Latino, and Anglo-Saxon. Armani exchange the range. Cash, lost tribe of Shabazz. Free at last. Brand new whips to crash. Then we laugh in the iller path. The villa houses for the crew. How we do? Trees for breakfast. Dime sexes have been stretches. So many years of depression make me vision the better living. Type of place to raise kids in. Opening eyes to the lies. History's told foul. But I'm as wise as the old owl. Plus the gold child. Seeing things like I was controlling. Click rolling. Tricking six digits on kicks and still holding trips to Paris. I civilize every savage. Give me one shot, I turn trite life to lavish. Political prisoner set free, stress free. No work release, purple M3s and jet skis. Feel the wind breeze in West Indies. I lick Coretta, Scott King, mayor of the cities, and reverse things to Willies. It sound foul, but every girl I meet to go downtown. I'd open every cell in Attica, send them to Africa.
If I rule the world,
imagine that.
I free all
story. How the thugs live in worry. Duck down in car seats, heat's mandatory. Running from Jake, getting chased, hunger for papes. These are the breaks, many mistakes go down out of state. Wait, I had to let it marinate. We carry weight, trying to get laced. Flip the A stack to safe. Millionaire plan to keep the gap with the cock hammer. Making moves in Atlanta, back and forth scrambler. Cause you can have all the chips. Be poor or rich, still nobody want a nigga have a shit. If I ruled the world and everything in it, sky's the limit. I push the Q45 infinite. It wouldn't be no such thing as jealousies or B felony. Strictly living longevity to the destiny I thought I'd never see, but reality struck. Better find out before your time's out. What the fuck?
If I rule the world,
imagine that.
I free all my sons. I love them, baby. Black diamonds and pearls.
Could it be, if you could be mine, we both shine.
If I rule the world,
still living for today, in these last days and times.
If I rule the world,
imagine
if
that.
I free all my
shine.
If I rule the world,
still living for today, in these last days and times.
If I rule the world,
if I rule,
I free all my sons.
I love them, baby.
Black diamonds and pearls.
If I rule,
if I rule the world, if I rule the world,
I love them, baby.
And we're back. Thank you again for tuning in to Fired Up here on WJMS Radio. I'm Steve, your host, and we're continuing our discussion of the games that are being played and how we avoid drinking the Kool-Aid. So in the first segment, we talked about polling and you know, what it is and how it works and some of the elements and things we need to watch out for. We're going to continue in kind of looking at the mechanics of how our news and information gets to us. So we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about the media. You know, if you've listened to the news, both sides, conservative and liberal and progressive, all sides have sort of one common theme in that they hold, quote, the media, close quote, responsible for some of the divide in this country and propagating, you know, the extreme right, extreme left ideologies out there into the world. And to some extent, that can be borne out if you look at the statistics and data of what's going on in terms of who is receiving, you know, input from the media and where they get it from. According to statistics that I've found, there are something like 130, 150 million households in the United States of America. And when you look at how those households receive their news, in particular, I want to focus a little bit on local news, because in true fact, most Americans get their news from a local source rather than exclusively or primarily from a national source. Typically, what you see in statistics, about 41% get their news from the television locally, and that's in comparison with about 37% overall that get their news from a digital or an online method. 23% of that 37% favor websites, and about 15% favor social media. And this information comes from the Pew Research Center, which is a nationally known research and survey organization, and it was collected earlier this year in 2019. Of the percentage that get their news, you know, online, some local news, about 41% of subscribers or listeners to local news get it from an online source, about split down the middle between social media and online news websites. So, you know, what does this mean for us as the recipients of this? Well, it goes back to what I always say, and if you're a listener to the show, you've heard me say this multiple times, you know, we have to be diligent in checking where our information is coming from. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, in the United States of America, you know, there are what are called television markets, and, you know, we'll talk a little bit about TV here. There was a list put out, and you can research this, the top 30 TV station groups, that is companies that own multiple television stations and markets across the country. And the top five or top six, you know, or okay, we'll go to top 10. So the top 10 broadcast groups, probably most of them, I bet my lunch money you've never heard of, actually control the overwhelming share, probably upwards to 90% of U.S. households that get their local news, you know, through TV, get them from one of these 10 broadcast media groups. The number one group is a company called Nexstar. It's N-E-X-S-T-A-R. And they actually have, according to the list, they had 141 full-power television stations, or they were broadcasting in 114 markets. Well, they actually just completed an acquisition of another group called Tribune, which had, as of 2019, 43 markets. So that brings them up to about 190, if I do my math right, overall markets, representing more than 70% of the U.S. households, you know, in America. So just tuck that number aside for a quick second. The number two group in the list is one I'm pretty sure you've never heard of, and it's called Sinclair Broadcasting. Now, Sinclair has 89 markets for a 39% coverage of the U.S., according to Nielsen and other rating organizations. And they actually have been in the news, and I'll get into that in a second, but they, you know, are a huge player in the number of households they reach, not just by statistical numbers, but also by location, where they are in the country. The number three is a company called Tegna, T-E-G-N-A. They have 50 markets. Fox, which is a name that we've all heard of, you know, Fox Broadcasting, a subsidiary of News Corp, Rupert Murdoch, etc. They're in 17 overall markets. CBS is in 18. NBC Universal is in 29. Another company you may not have heard of called Gray Broadcasting Group, they're in 95 markets. They actually have a coverage of about 24% of the country. Another, which has been in the media and the news business for a long time, is Scripps. And then number nine is ABC Disney, with 8 markets. And Scripps, by the way, has 43 markets in the United States. And number 10 is Univision, which has 25 markets, or about 45% of the coverage of national households, in the country. So when you take these top 10, you are probably, as I said, looking at better than 90% of the households in the United States receive their local news information from one of these 10 broadcast group companies. Now, just as a side note, in 1983, there were, 50 companies that had the equivalent amount of coverage in the United States. And now most of that has boiled down to 6 mega broadcast groups that just dominate and control the media market in our country. So what does that mean as we talk about this in terms of our overall goal here on Fired Up of being woke and taking woke to the next level and creating action? Well, it means that in many cases, the information that we are getting is coming from these single source broadcast groups, and is filtered down to us through these local markets, to our TV screens or our online screens or our mobile screens or whatever every day. So we have 6 companies or 10 companies providing a message that is getting distributed out through these 200 plus markets, and that creates the media message that we see. So as you think about that and digest that for a second, you are getting your information, depending on where you live in the country, you may be getting your information on multiple TV stations in the local news from the same parent company or same broadcast group. How can that be impacted? Well, I'll use Sinclair as an example. I'm not picking on, one side or the other, but I will use Sinclair because they actually have been, in the news over the last year about something that was reported in a web-based news outlet. And basically what was happening is that Sinclair Broadcast Group, and again, not picking on them, not picking right versus left, just Sinclair Broadcast Group, put out what are called must-reads to their affiliated TV stations. And a must-read is just like it sounds. Here is a script, here is, content that you have to play, that you are required by contract to play. And these messages that were going out from Sinclair were a unified message of a conservative-leaning, pro-right-leaning, President of the United States supporting message. And, all of these television stations had to read this message or had to broadcast this message as part of their local news. Now, you know, that, you know, is perfectly legal. You know, they are allowed to say whatever they want. We have the right of free speech in this country. However, from our standpoint, from what we need to understand and being aware and doing our diligence and homework, we need to understand the danger that this can present. And I emphasize the word can. Now, you know, as I said, Sinclair has a right-leaning philosophy. That's okay. That's their prerogative. There are others out there that lean the other way. You know, Comcast, NBC, Universal, and so forth are a more progressive to liberal leaning media outlet, and their messages, you know, generally favor that. So, you know, again, you must look at your sourcing, and you must be conscious of where the information comes from, and, you know, dig in and do your diligence. You know, if you are getting your news and information from a, you know, Comcast or from an NBC Universal or an ABC or any of the, you know, more progressive leaning stations, your diligence should tell you to go check on some of the opposing views so that you can get a more balanced picture and find out what the truth really is and make up your own mind. A lot of what transpires today is that information gets passed along in this straight line, you know, one after the other approach, where we'll get information from a source, whether it's a broadcast media or an online media outlet, a website, social media, and so forth. We have a tendency to take, you know, that as gospel because it came from someone we quote know and trust, close quote, in our media source, and we go ahead and propagate that information out to our circle. What needs to happen more and more is we've got to engage with those sources, find out where they're getting their information. Just as I was saying in the prior segment when we were talking about polling, you know, is this a reputable source? Is this a, you know, a nationally known or a regionally known or some source that you can verify and find out, you know, what their program is, what their thinking is, how does that match up with how you think? And, you know, from that, we can begin to really make our decisions based on more evidence and fact-based and critical thinking and truth rather than just accepting the opinions of media sources from whatever they might be that are handed to us, you know, on, you know, a silver platter. So going back to Sinclair, what they do is they will produce, as I said, these must reads or these must broadcast points, which each of these stations must program, must broadcast as part of their local news. And, you know, an interesting video compilation of this was prepared in April of last year and, you know, made its way and actually went somewhat viral on the internet, showing, you know, dozens and dozens of Sinclair-owned stations and their news anchors all reading the exact same script on the exact same day, you know, in, you know, various markets around the country. I will post the link to this video. I'll tweet it out on my Twitter feed, which is, you know, at @RUFiredUp. And I will also post it on my Facebook page, Fired Up Radio, at Facebook. And you can see for yourself and make and judge and create your own opinion on what you think about this. Now again, I'm not picking on Sinclair because they are a conservative leaning organization. The same argument can be made for, you know, for others. I have in my daily consumption or overconsumption of news and information from media sources, I listen to a broad range of broadcast media, either, you know, over TV, on the radio, in satellite radio. Because of my job, I travel a lot and I'm on the road a lot, so I have many hours, you know, behind the wheel where I can cruise all around satellite radio and listen to a broad variety of sources. I go across the board. I go from Sirius XM, from POTUS to Patriot, from, Urban View to MSNBC, CNN, HLN, CNN, all of them. And basically, I gather what they're all talking about, especially if there is an overriding news item, as there has been, like, say, with the impeachment process, and listen to how each of the various media markets presents it. From that, I can get, a sense of what their spin is. Are they, taking the right side, the left side? Are they trying to stay down the middle? And, somewhere in the middle of all of that circle of information, the truth can be constructed. And that's the kind of exercise we all need to do, is we all need to broaden our sources, dig deeper, dig wider, as I say, and make sure that we are getting the facts that we need, that we can apply our critical thinking to, and come to our own decision as to how we want to take action based on what we're being told. So this concept of, must reads and dictated opinions that come down from these broadcast groups is something that we need to keep a wary eye and ear out for, so that when we are being subjected to it, we can recognize it. As I said, when you watch that video, and I hope that you will, you actually can see, a whole collection, and they multi-screen, these excerpts from these broadcasts, and every one of these news anchors is saying the exact same thing. They're almost like a chorus singing the exact same song. And, that is a concern that we all should share, is, and I think it's kind of a moot question, because I think we all know the answer to it. Is our media feeding, are what we are being fed by the media, is that really being shaved down to, talking points and political strategies and party affiliation, thinking, so forth, and not really giving us just the facts so that we can make up our own minds? It's clear that, there is a bias in the media, one way or the other. That there is no argument to that point. What we need to do is to combat that bias with critical thinking, with doing our research, with making sure that we understand that, we need facts, not opinions, and, not someone telling us where we need to march, how we need to march, and so forth. We need to really, really exercise our independence. So we are going to cover this subject, a few more times as we go forward over the course of the shows. I'll keep on top of it and bring you more information. But again, just to be aware, these news outlets control, by and large, how just about everybody in America gets their information. Now, if you are, following just one source, so be it, but just be aware that you are not getting perhaps the full picture. All right, so we're going to wrap up this segment on that note. When we come back, we're going to do our call to action segment, and I'll address some of these as well as what we've talked about today. You're listening to Fire It Up. I'm Steve. We're here each week giving you, the behind the curtains look at how politics in the U.S. works. We'll be right back for our call to action segment. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned. Stand,
I'm calling every woman, calling every man. We're the generation, we can't afford to wait. The future started yesterday, and we're already late. We've been looking for a song to sing. We search for a melody, search for someone to lead. We've been looking for the world to change. If you feel the same, then go on and save.
more broken promises, no more call to war. Less is love and peace that we're really fighting for. We can destroy hunger, we can conquer hate. Put down the arms and raise your voice, we're joining hands today. For a leader, but the leader was me.
We were looking for the world to change.
We can be heroes, just go on and say, if you're out there, sing along with me. If you're out there, I'm dying to believe that you're out there. Stand up and say it loud.
Message, wherever you stand, calling every woman, calling every man. We're the generation we can't afford to wait. The future started yesterday.
And welcome back. This is Steve, and you're here on Fire It Up. Thank you for listening here on WJMS Radio. And we're going to now do as we do each week with a few items that you can take as actions to educate, to inform, and to take, you know, being woke, as I say, to the next level. So in today's episode, we talked about polling, and we talked about the media. So in both cases, you know, the call to action, the things we must do are, as I've said many, many times, we must analyze, we must digest, we must think deeper and think wider, and, you know, judge the sources that we are getting our information from, or the sources that are asking us questions if it's a poll, and ask, you know, are they, one, reputable? Are they, two, reflective of our way of thinking? And is there a basis for fact in what they are telling us or asking of us? So, you know, if you are looking at the news and they're talking about the latest poll on the candidates for president, or they're talking, you know, opinions on, you know, the impeachment process going on, or climate change, or hunger, or housing, or any of the hot button items that drive our politics and our news intake each day, consider the source. And don't just take it on face value based on one source that is providing you the information. Dive into it. Find out. Get the information you need in order to make that informed decision, particularly when it comes to elections and politics, from the local level to the national level, because that plays such a key role in how we decide who we are going to elect to represent us in our government. And, you know, once again, always keep in mind, the government works for us, not the other way around. We dictate who gets into office. We give them their marching orders. So your homework task is make sure that you are making your decisions from a political standpoint based on solid information from multiple sources. That's the key. That's the key to making sure that what you decide when you go into that voting booth is what actually reflects what you believe. You know, if you are absent from the process, if you're not voting, and the numbers are staggering in terms of the number of people that do not vote in this country, then you are essentially handing control of your world to someone else who may not think the same way that you do. You know, when it comes to getting our information from the media, realize that in this country, there are a small group of companies that control the overwhelming supply of news and information that we get each day. And we talked about television in this segment. We're going to come back and talk more about the media as we go through our programs, you know, week over week and month over month going into 2020. And, you know, look at not only TV, but we're going to look at radio. We're going to look at, you know, print media. We're going to look at the internet. We're going to dive in all of this so that I can hopefully give you the tools you need in order to make the best informed decisions that you can. In the polling segment, you know, as I said, where you get your information, you need to verify the source. There are nationally recognized polling organizations. Look at who is providing that information. There are nationally known polling organizations. There are regionally known polling organizations. And I'm not saying that, you know, polls done at the local level are not factually correct. They may be for that area. But again, go behind the scenes. Go behind what information you're seeing, what you're hearing. Dig into it. You know, look at the numbers. How many people did they survey? What's their margin of error? Remember what I said. The larger the survey group, the smaller and more accurate the margin of error will be, and that can tend to give more credence to the content of a poll. You know, when we talk about television media, you know, there are a handful of companies that control what we see, hear, read, and search for each day. We need to always, you know, look at the information we're receiving with that critical thinking cap on so that we are asking the questions to say, well, wait, where is this information coming from? Is this being reported by other media outlets? Is this consistent? You know, or is this just one side of the argument as opposed to looking at both sides or all sides of the argument? You know, and it doesn't matter whether you are a conservative, you know, a liberal, a progressive, or whatever. You know, you need to make sure that you get all the facts when you make your decisions. So that's critical. That's part of our call to action for this week. As always, our standing call to action with regards to the upcoming national as well as your local area elections. And remember, it isn't just the election in November. There are elections going on around the country all throughout the year. So, you know, number one, get informed. What's happening? What elections are coming up? Whether it's a local area election, you know, something in your city or your county, whether it's a state election, or whether, you know, it is the big national election that comes up in November of next year. What are the issues that are important to you? Which candidates are actually talking to those issues? And your action item is engage with those candidates from the local level to the national level. In a prior episode, I gave you contact information that is posted or will be posted on my Facebook page, and I will tweet out that information periodically over the course of the coming year so that you can be informed as to how to communicate with your elected officials from the local level all the way to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And you need to do that. You need to make sure that you are diving in, that you are getting educated, that you are digging deeper, that you are finding out what is critical for you and who among the potential elected officials or your elected officials now are speaking to those points, are responding to what you want them to do. That is key and critical as we go forward in this political year and beyond, as we look to move our country from its divided nature now to a more uniform representation of what the American people think and believe. That is a long-term process, as I've said. It is not something that's going to be fixed, you know, with just one election cycle. You know, it is something that is going to take years, many years, for us to correct. So again, our action item, get informed, make sure that your voter registration status is verified, make sure that you are prepared with whatever it is you need to have with you when you go to the polls to vote. Lastly, make sure that you are communicating, make sure that you are getting the information, go out and find it. If there's a subject that you're interested in, find out what it is, you know, or research what it is, what are the facts, and make sure that you verify that, you know, your elected officials or your media is providing you the information you need. You can, in fact, reach out to your local TV stations and the national media as well and express your concerns. Make sure that you are taking that communication step as well. As always, information that you hear on the show will find its way onto our Facebook page and our Twitter site. And if you want to reach out to us, you can reach out to us through Facebook, through Twitter, and I'll give you those links in a second, as well as through email. You can email the show directly. The email address is firedupradio@yahoo.com. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/FiredUp Radio, all one word, and our Twitter handle is @RUFiredUp. That's A-R-E, the letter U, and Fired Up. We will be, you know, expanding our media and social media contact points over the course, you know, in 2020. We're going to be bringing some really, hopefully, exciting changes to the show, and, you know, reaching out and trying to encourage and obtain, you know, feedback. I'd love to hear, you know, your feedback on the show, especially if you've been listening for a while. I'd love to hear what you think of the show. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it ugly? You know, I'm not thin-skinned. I want to know, you know, your thoughts. Are there subjects that, you know, you'd like Fired Up Radio to dig into for you within the realm of the political process? So with that being said, I want to thank you all for listening. Have a great and safe week. We will talk to you again. Take care. This is Steve. You're listening to Fired Up Radio here on WJMS, and we will see you again in our next show.